but newspress.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Money Talk. I'm Neil Kreisel, and Diane Duva and I are your hosts every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 11, and on Saturdays at 6. We're brought to you by Broadview Mortgage, whose highly trained and experienced team takes great pride in helping people with home financing, offering competitive rates and a wide array of loan programs. And Nelson Brothers, a 1031 exchange expert, providing property owners and landlords opportunities to invest in professionally managed student housing projects. And Arnaldi's Cafe, one of Santa Barbara's oldest and most intimate restaurants since 1937, located on the corner of Olive and Cota Street in downtown Santa Barbara. And Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm in Santa Barbara, providing its clients with the personal care and attention of a small independent firm coupled with the vast resources of a major financial institution.
Hi, Neil. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Diane. And as I mentioned, Arnaldi's Cafe is not only one of Santa Barbara's oldest and most intimate restaurants, it's also the home of your bocce team.
It is, and we have a game tonight, as a matter of fact. We've been rained out, you know, this winter league season so much with the rains that I feel like we haven't played at all.
How do you get rained out of an indoor sport?
Well, Neil, because the bocce balls courts at Arnaldi's are outside. You've been out there.
Oh, I didn't know. I didn't look up.
Is this an aging moment?
Is this an aging? No, it's a New York moment. New Yorkers don't look up. We just look down.
Look up. The bocce ball court is on the ground. What do you mean, look
no,
up?
No, but there's no. I didn't know there wasn't a ceiling.
Oh, gotcha.
Nope. Okay. Well, thank you for listening. We'll be back next week. No, sir. In today's Wall Street Journal, there's an interesting article on the front page. Bond yields signal shift. Treasury bills, 10-year Treasury bills, just hit 2.5% yield, which exceeded the 1.91% yield of dividends on the S&P 500. And this is the first time in...
That's significant. It's significant. The first time in
In a long time. Well, let's see.
The article could be like 8 years.
The 10-year Treasury bill for years has basically been below the yield on stocks, which some investors believe is the reason why stocks have done so well. And in fact, this is not part of the article, but it's something that I couldn't help but bring in because I used to teach finance. But one of the theoretical models for valuing stocks is the capital asset pricing model, which takes into account the risk-free rate versus interest rates to come up with a capitalization rate for stocks. And the higher interest rates are, the higher the risk premium becomes. And the higher the risk premium becomes, the greater the discount rate is on earnings from a company. So that there is a theoretical reason why, not just a conceptual reason, but a theoretical reason that's grounded in some good economics why higher interest rates lower the value of stocks. And so the article points out that it's possible that with the spread now favoring bonds, stocks may be less attractive.
Well, you know, and I have to say, I was just speaking about this earlier, and I think that article has a companion piece that we were discussing at lunch, that basically you have bond yields that have been so low that people couldn't live off just a bond portfolio. They've actually had to be pushed into stocks, or they're being cooked by inflation. And you know, that's a real problem when your investment philosophy is to just be in fixed income, and that's what you think is the safest investment for you when you're not getting any interest at all.
And one of the things that I think this article points out that I hadn't realized is that when this spread turned negative against interest rates after the 2008 crash, it was the first time it happened in half a century. So this last 10-year experience or 8-year experience has really been unique. And the other factor that has caused stocks to go up, many people think, is the buying back of stock by companies. And because of some of the proposed tax changes and some of the incentives to invest rather than to pay dividends, one could see buybacks, and it's already started to become less attractive to companies.
Absolutely, absolutely. And when with the yields raising, I think we'll become into a more normalized interest rate environment. We're not going to see, you know, that said, you're not going to see your checking account or your money markets account or your savings accounts interest rates go up anytime soon. But it does get us into a more normalized course.
Just to make sure we give our listeners a complete balance, the other side of the coin is that higher interest rates typically indicate expectations of a stronger economy. And if we do have a stronger economy, then earnings should do well. And therefore, you can make the case, which is why everything that has theoretical has two sides to it. You can make the case that higher interest rates on 10-year bonds means more earnings growth, which would result in higher stock prices.
Right, because, you know, as the Fed raises interest rates, what in fact they're saying is that the economy is looking healthy. The numbers that they're looking at, unemployment, you know, they are looking healthy. The economy as a whole is better, which is why they're raising interest rates.
Now, this next article is somewhat of a surprise, it's entitled, Is There a Large Tax Bill Lurking in Your Tax-Free Retirement Account? When people invest in an IRA, they expect that the results each year, the returns each year, would be tax-free. But that's not the case. IRAs are both Roth and traditional IRAs are subject to UBTI rules, unincorporated business tax. Unrelated business tax, which is a esoteric tax that was originally put on the books to make sure that not-for-profits like schools and hospitals that had a side business didn't get preferential tax treatment for those businesses. So if you, for example, invest in part of your IRA money in a natural gas limited partnership, or which has a depreciation that essentially reduces your cost basis, or other types, which is I'm not going to go into the technical things. Other types of
partnerships, really.
Of partnerships that are part of that are not exempt from ownership by a not-for-profit, and IRAs are defined by the IRS as not-for-profit. So they're subject to the same rules as not-for-profits.
And another good way to think about it is if it's something that generates a K-1. So if you get a K-1 for some investment in your IRA account or your 401k account or your Roth IRA account, the reason why you're getting a K-1 is because it's generating income that you could be taxed upon, and it's a problem.
And this is a reason to have a financial planner, because people, you know, sometimes think they can do their own open heart surgery. And, you know, there's clearly certain things that the average investor isn't aware of. And one of the things is the possibility of being taxed on certain parts of your income. And it's not just the tax. I know from experience that sometimes I'll have to have my accountant fill out a tax form that will cost several hundred dollars for 18 cents of UBTI income in South Carolina from some, you know,
some random
investment in some fund. So it could be expensive just to have made investments in areas that you really should have kept away from.
Absolutely.
So the next article is interesting because it talks, and we talked about this a couple of weeks ago for another reason. We talked about the concentration of bigger companies as industries become less and less competitive, as bigger companies become more powerful because of the economies of scale. And a study just came out that showed that as businesses dominate a particular industry, the percentage of labor as a percentage of total expenses goes down. And as a result, there becomes a greater income disparity. So that labor share of revenue is reduced as businesses become more concentrated. And this is, in this article's view, one of the reasons why we have such a large disparity in incomes between the very rich and the very poor. It's not just trade with China. It's not just the lack of competitiveness around the world. It's also simply because big companies can do things like
automation,
economies of scale, and the this concentration is a slow but steady movement where in the conclusion of this article is that the researchers examined six industries that account for 80% of private employment in the United States, and they found that the top four companies controlled 43% of sales in 2012 versus 38% in 1982. So we do have a shift taking place, and that shift isn't just in terms of lack of competitiveness in industry, but also the lower percentage that labor takes up total revenues.
And it kind of goes hand in hand with that article that we discussed 2 weeks ago now about companies. It's harder for a smaller company to come in and disrupt that large behemoth in a certain space due to inefficiencies. And that also talks about it because with automation comes fewer jobs, fewer dollars spent towards income.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
When I saw a woman unconscious in her chair, not breathing, I felt frozen in time. As a longtime waitress in Santa Barbara, I've seen a lot, but this was frightening. Fortunately, I had just gotten my CPR recertification from our local Red Cross chapter. I was able to assess the situation, lay the woman on the floor, and start chest compressions and rescue breathing. Suddenly, I heard a gurgling in the woman's throat, and someone said, "She's breathing." I continued using the CPR skills I'd learned at the Red Cross until the paramedics arrived. Some people call me a hero. I don't think of myself that way. I'm just an ordinary person who knew what to do in an emergency situation. Thanks to my local Red Cross training, I helped save a life.
The American Red Cross, Santa Barbara County Chapter, is here to prepare you for emergencies. Call 805-687-1331 or go to sbredcross.org.
Hey guys, let's play some video games.
This new dad plays video games with his sons, but the challenge feels like he's lifting a metric ton.
So many buttons!
His avatar just stares at the walls, twists and turns and somehow falls.
Help me!
He's tangled up in the controller's cords.
I just don't understand this crazy digital world.
Crazy, crazy digital world.
Zeros and ones.
But the love from his kids is totally apparent. Ooh. See, you don't have to be perfect to be the perfect parent.
You should have just played catch. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of siblings in foster care will take you just as you are. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUS Kids, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Broadview Mortgage. Since 1988, a mortgage banker and direct lender that believes in providing in-depth loan consulting to its customers in a personalized and honest manner. And we can be reached at 805-564-1290.
And we're thrilled to have in studio with us today Marcus Kosmer, who is a partner at Beinack, Farver, Archbold, and Spray.
Hi, guys.
How you doing? Thanks for being here today. He is an attorney, and tell us a little bit about what's your specialty, what's your practice specialty.
Well, first I want to say thanks a lot for having me on. It's great to be here, and I really enjoyed the opening segment. It was interesting to see what you guys pulled out of the financial news that I look at weekly, and most of it just,
over.
It just goes right by. So it's nice to have somebody dig in and explain it. I'm a real estate attorney. Beinack, Farver, Archbold, and Spray is a local law firm where I run the real estate and land use practice group, but we're a full-service business law firm.
Yes, and actually, in full disclosure, your firm represents Arlington Financial Advisors.
Well, that's right, we do.
Yeah. So thanks for being here. So now, you got your law degree from the University of Montana.
Yeah, that's right. I had I was hedging. I think you guys are probably familiar with a term like that. And when I went off to law school, plan B was to be a ski bum. Actually, that might have been plan A.
And your parents made you do something a little bit else.
Law school was the hedge. I also had a deep interest in environmental law at that time, and they had a good environmental law program. It ended up being a great place to go to law school and a great experience because in a state like that, there's one law school. There's
no sun, so you were inside studying all day. It didn't matter.
You know, the weather's not too bad. You just have to be ready to put on a coat every once in a while. but it is it still has that kind of Jefferson ideal, in my opinion. You know, there's not too many people in the state, and you can get to know your governor or your representative. You can be active, and it has a citizen legislature, and people still make a difference. So it was a very inspiring place to go to law school.
And I guess the other advantage, if you're going to be in the law practice that deals with real estate developers, dealing with grizzly bears in the woods is probably good training.
Yeah, well, you know, something that's perhaps unique there that you don't get a lot of in California is that there are a lot of public lands in California, but in Montana, the federal government has an outsized influence on local land use development because just about anywhere you go, you're hemmed in on several sides by public lands. And the other issue that is a little bit unique up there, of course, is that you're dealing with a lot of tribal lands. So it was interesting to get an education in that as well.
Perfect. So in your practice here in Santa Barbara, who do you primarily represent? Do you represent the landlords or the tenants?
Well, we're kind of all over the map. I'd say in the residential side of things, most of our clients are in local investors who might have multifamily properties, and there we're on the landlord side of things primarily. Then on the commercial side of things, when you get out of multifamily, we represent a lot of operating companies here in Santa Barbara, especially in the hospitality industry. And so there you're dealing with a lot of real estate issues, not just landlord-tenant issues, but a lot of real estate issues that where you're the occupant of the real estate, whether it's through an ownership model or through a leasing model where you're trying to deal with getting projects approved, whether it's getting permission from your landlord or getting permission from the permitting authorities to do what you need to do to make your business grow.
And I know that that's primarily where you focus, but I'm not sure if you saw the NewsHawk article this morning about rent control and how that's coming forward, and if you could tell us a little bit about that.
I did, yeah. So that's in the city of Santa Barbara, and they're actually having a city council meeting tomorrow where they're going to take this matter up. But the city council has become concerned about the limited supply of rental housing, especially affordable rental housing in the city of Santa Barbara. I think that article referenced a half of a percent, a 50 basis point vacancy rate in the city, which means that rents are skyrocketing. And they're trying to figure out whether they can or should be doing anything about it. And so, of course, that means, rent control and a whole host of other issues.
And also, the city did something along the lines of high density. And I know a few years back that was a big buzzword, and I'm sure that it actually has a different word. But share with us what that actually means and what they hope to accomplish by it.
Well, it's interesting. There's the AUD program, which is the Alternative Unit Density Program. It was kind of a pilot program that got off the ground not too long ago in the city where they were playing a little bit with the average unit size for project development, trying to figure out a model where developers could build projects where you're generating more units. With smaller square foot units, there's more units per project, per development, and whether the prices of those might be more affordable for buyers and renters, but you would still come out ahead if you were the project developer. It's still penciled out for you to get started in the first place. What I find interesting is that the concept behind that's run into some neighborhood opposition and some roadblocks from some of the new city council members. And what's interesting about that is that that is a market way, if you will, of trying to take care of some of our affordability program problem rather. And what we're doing now, what the city's looking at now, is putting the brakes on that, and at the same time getting involved in something like the rent control, where you're using a kind of a different way to try to accomplish the same thing.
Well, it looks like we have a caller, so I do have a follow-up question on that, but let's take our caller first, and then we'll get back to the rent control density issue. Hi, caller.
Hi. I have a quick question.
Sure, go ahead. Thanks for calling.
I am a landlord, and I was wondering, I have tenants who have... they were supposed to keep the yard up and then also not have any animals. And I noticed that the place is looking more shabby. And I would like them to get rid of the chickens in the backyard. What are my rights there in terms of having them perform to that contract?
That's for our guest, Marcus. Marcus, go ahead.
Well, you know, a lot of that depends on what the contract says, and I don't know what the situation might be in your particular case, but if you think they're not living up to the contract, then they would be in default, and you may want to try to get them to perform and either take care of those situations, or there may be a need to get them out. What your options are really just depends on what your rental agreement says. And then as well, you know, you don't want to violate any laws when you're taking care of that situation. So it sounds like you need to talk to a lawyer privately, not over a radio program.
So you could call in to Beinack, Farver, Archibald, and Spray, and what would be the best person to ask for? You?
Yeah, go ahead and ask for me.
Okay,
yeah.
And what's your phone number, Marcus?
It's 805-966-7000.
Thanks so much for your call.
You're so welcome. Thank you.
So yeah, you must get that question often, where you have a landlord that's having difficulties with a tenant, and what is the eviction process like if it gets to that point?
Well, you know, evictions can be challenging. I like to tell people that it's one of those ounce of prevention type situations where when you get into the business of renting residential real estate to other people, you really want to make sure that you're making decisions as best as you can on the front end in terms of how you're renting and who you're renting to, and that you're documenting everything properly so that you can preserve your rights in what is a very tenant-friendly regime in terms of dealing with problems when they do arise.
And does an eviction process go through the court system, or is it arbitration? Or
it does go through the court system, that's right.
So it's actually a judgment and...
Yeah, most usually what you have to do, you have to go through something called, especially on the residential side, something called an unlawful detainer process, where there are certain rules you have to comply with in terms of giving a tenant notice that they are going to, that you're starting proceedings against them. And then you go through a very, well, by court standards, a fast process to get them out. But it is often a situation where you're going to have a little dip in your rental income for a while, in addition to incurring some fees and expenses.
And you're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KCSB, and we'll be right back.
Property owners and landlords, are you looking for or considering a 1031 exchange? Would you enjoy the freedom of getting out of management and potentially generating monthly cash flow without paying capital gains taxes? What if you could invest in professionally managed properties anchored by historical stability of major universities? Hello, I'm Jim Whitson. If you're a property owner or landlord looking for or considering a 1031 exchange to diversify into multiple properties that I believe are well-positioned and have limited correlations to the economy, please call me at 805-895-4176. That's 805-895-4176 for an appointment to see the great student housing 1031 exchanges that I have available for your consideration.
Suitable for accredited investors only. Past performance does not guarantee future results. Investments involve risk, and there's no assurance of attaining the investment objectives of any program. Securities offered through Oak Tree Securities, Incorporated, only in states where Oak Tree Securities is registered.
It's a fact. Successful wealth management is built on strategies that focus on the big picture, take a long-term view, and establish deep and valued relationships. Hello, I'm Diane Duva, founding partner at Arlington Financial Advisors, Santa Barbara's trusted family guide, empowering you to make more informed and confident decisions. At Arlington Financial Advisors, we bring order and balance to your financial life by monitoring and managing risk so you can focus on your work, family, and enjoying the moment. We are a fully independent firm offering strategic financial planning, estate and tax planning, and private money management. Our plans and portfolios are handcrafted using a rigorous and disciplined approach, supported by a consistent yet highly personalized client experience. Our clients look to Arlington Financial Advisors as a home away from home, a comfortable place to protect what they've accomplished while they prepare for what comes next. Please visit arlingtonfinancialadvisors.com or call me, Diane Duva, at 805-699-7300.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Nelson Brothers, offering 1031 exchanges to property owners and landlords for professionally managed student housing complexes. You know, you were talking before about rent control, and believe it or not, I'm from New York.
And New Shocking, York, no one knew.
And New York started rent control in 1946. And by the way, for those of you who are not regular listeners, you can't get more to the left than me. And I'm going to sound like I'm a little bit right wing now, but it's just the empirical evidence is so overwhelming that what happened with rent control is that builders decided not to build anymore because they didn't like the restraints that rent control put on them. And about 10, 12 years ago in New York, they began to get rid of rent controls. And as a result, there was a housing boom. Now there's a housing glut, and now rents are going down. So the idea of incentivizing people to build housing by controlling how much rents they can charge is really not available. There are no facts to prove other than the opposite. And if you want more housing, you have to build. And people don't want to build here. And that's a good, I understand that it's beautiful. And you may not want to build high rises. You may not want to build any kind of affordable housing. But then you're going to end up with high rents. So
your comment actually begs the question of how much building really is there in the city of Santa Barbara new residential?
It's very difficult to build in this town. And so if you put rent control on, you not only would be difficult, no one's going to want to do it.
Well, that's another interesting...
Are they doing it now, I guess, is
my question. Well, they're not in any appreciable numbers, and certainly nothing that's going to move the needle in terms of affordability, and this AUD issue's, case in
point. Talking about, four to six, there was a single-family home, it gets taken out, and four to six apartments or condos get put in its place? That's probably the...
Well, this pilot program, there is actually only going to be 200 units built under it, if I remember correctly, and I'm sure if I'm wrong, somebody will point that out. But it was really a very small pilot program, and they only got about halfway through it before they started talking about putting the brakes on it. And it's for exactly the reasons that Neil pointed out, where people start looking around when it's on their street corner. It's across the street from them where this is happening, and they get worried about the character of the neighborhood changing, or they get worried about traffic or parking or safety or something like that, and they mobilize and they organize. But it's interesting too, to illustrate how little building goes on in the city in particular. One of the things that NewsHawk article mentioned was that there's been very, very little new construction since the 90s. And so the housing stock is getting quite old. So the other thing that they're looking at apparently at this meeting tomorrow night is going to be whether there should be sort of maintenance and upkeep requirements. So essentially, it sounds to me like there's a couple of proposals. One is you can't charge any more rent. The other is you got to start spending more money taking care of your real estate.
And what happened in New York when they did this same exact issue, is the only people that would own real estate were slumlords, because they were the ones that didn't care about breaking the rules. And so you had even an acceleration of deterioration, because responsible landlords just can't afford to make the repairs.
I don't pretend to be an expert in rent control, but I have a couple of small kids, so therefore I'm an expert in incentives, and I do understand that without an incentive, it's hard to get behavior. And I just, real estate developers, they want to have a couple more nickels at the end of the day than what they started with. And so if these projects if we don't set something up where these projects pencil out, then you get exactly what you have now, which is, you know, people sitting on these projects, raising the rent or not raising it if rent control comes in, but you're not going to make any progress because people are just, they're just going to try to suck the income out of it without turning the projects over.
Right. So let's transition into commercial real estate.
Yeah.
So, you know, you walk down State Street today and there are more vacancies than, gosh, I think I've seen since I've been here, and I've been here since 1998.
Yeah.
What is going on there? And it feels like the commercial real estate market is really hot in terms of people wanting to buy it, but then no one's leasing it. So,
well, it's interesting, and I think the market still is pretty hot in things like office properties, and certainly multifamily is real hot still for the reasons we were just discussing. But what you're noticing, you know, when you go out on State Street for a sandwich or to do a little shopping or something like that, if anyone still goes out and pounds the pavement to do shopping, I'm not sure they do, and that's part of the problem.
Hey, I saw you in a store around Christmas time shopping
right.
for your wife.
A little last minute shopping. That's still two-day free shipping still hasn't beat the procrastination
to the day gene. Before Christmas.
That's right. But there are a lot of vacancies in our retail corridor right now. And, you know, originally the issue was the Great Recession, and there were some some folks that struggled as a result of that, and there were some buying opportunities as a result of that. But things have not really come back in the retail sector, and there's a lot of the downtown organization and the Chamber of Commerce and a lot of other groups, the brokers are real interested in whether there's some kind of a structural change that is coming from the rise of e-commerce and Amazon and things like that, that's really changing the landscape permanently. Something that's it's curious in my mind what's going to happen. You know, the funk zone is real hot and popular right now.
Yeah.
And land values have really gone up down there. We have the La Entrada project coming on here pretty soon. That's well underway.
Well, that's what I mean. You know, gosh, how many commercial spaces are there in there? Quite a few.
Yeah, there are. And you start to wonder in terms of the retail traffic, if you have all that action down there at the bottom of State Street, are people still going to make the hike up 5 blocks or 10 blocks to visit the rest of the street?
Right. Well, and what you know for sure is they're not going to make it all the way up to, say, Victoria Street.
That's right.
If there's shopping overload between... You know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, and that's, you know, if you come off a cruise ship, that's certainly true. There, or at least, I don't know if it's the stereotype in my mind of the stereotypical
right.
Cruise ship t-shirt shop visitor. But, you know, people have to find a way to make those other properties work. And, you know, maybe it's a different type of customer or a different type of experience. And
well,
that chapter remains to be written.
Right. It feels like in the last 5 years, you know, the State Street corridor has really become the discount corridor. So
yeah.
You have a lot of... A lot of tailoring to the college students or the discount shopper.
Yeah, but, and remember a few years ago, though, we were going to have an arts district up around the museum, right? People were talking about how that was going to be the popular spot for a more high-end experience. And I don't know what's really happened with that. You know, I don't know what you guys see. I haven't seen that come to fruition quite as much as people were hoping.
Do you think that part of the reason that prices for these properties haven't declined is, and this is just anecdotal information that we've gotten from time to time, that there are a lot of rich people in Santa Barbara that just want to own commercial real estate, and they're paying a premium, and they're not buying it on an internal rate of return or NOI. They're buying it simply to say, I own this block on State Street.
Yeah, I have the same kind of anecdotal impression of what's going on. I mean, people... I think there is an element of people buying and selling these like monopoly pieces, and you know if you're trying to buy one on an SBA loan or something like that, it's not going to happen because the cap rates don't make sense. People are buying, they're paying cash. They're not using leverage, which is
right. They're all cash deals.
Seems kind of very. I mean, leverage is such a great. Reason to invest in real estate, so it's an interesting phenomenon, and I have seen it. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
You're listening to Money Talk on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station. We'll be right back.
Star Jasmine Music serves over 3,600 people per year. By providing a safe, supportive environment to explore music, you'll find a place that resonates within. We teach songwriting and how to play a variety of instruments. We have a Pro Tools state-of-the-art recording facility and provide opportunities for teens and young adults who show passion for music and demonstrate talent to record their work. This experience has been known to better one's self-esteem and often leads to development of skills in business and self-management. We have special programs for at-risk youth, as well as the mentally and physically challenged. When ready after a 10-week series, we record our students and give them a CD to show the fruit of their efforts. This experience leads to self-confidence. Visit us at www.starjasminemusic.org. Star Jasmine Music. Sharing music exploration through teaching and recording.
Today in school, I learned a lot. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in physics, I learned that I'm a loser.
Today in school, I learned that I'm ugly and useless. And in gym, I learned that I'm pathetic and a joke. In history, I learned that I'm trash.
Today in school, I learned that I have no friends. In English, I learned that I make people sick. And at lunch, I learned that I sit on my own because I smell. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes
me. In biology, I learned that I'm fat and stupid. And in math, I learned that I'm trash.
The only thing I didn't learn in school today...
The only thing I didn't learn today...
The only thing I didn't learn...
is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arnaldi's Cafe, one of Santa Barbara's oldest and most intimate restaurants since 1937, located on the corner of Olive and Cota Street in downtown Santa Barbara.
I just have to let everybody out there listening know that it's my grandmother's 95th birthday today.
What's she doing?
They had a it's in Massachusetts. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to go, but there was a surprise birthday party for her this weekend, and I sent her her favorite flower.
Wow, cool. That's you.
Exciting, huh?
Absolutely.
And in case you're just joining us, the show isn't about my grandmother's birthday, but in fact, we're talking today in studio with Marcus Kosmer of Beinack Favor Archball and Spray.
It's a mouthful.
It is a mouthful. I know. I always have to stop and think about it. And he is a land use attorney. And we were talking on the break about some, new things that are headed your way with the legalization of marijuana in the state of California. And so share with us what you're seeing out there.
Yeah, that's right. That's been an interesting development. The phrase I've heard thrown around is green fever. And there's... a surprising number of very serious investors in this area, people who have seen projections that this is going to go from like a $7 billion industry currently to well over a $20 billion industry just in the next few years. And people are looking at where they're going to – what we're seeing is – well, we're seeing all along the supply chain, but the licensed recreational cannabis business is going to come online. State licenses in the first part of next year, in theory, if they can get all the regulations written by then. But one of the things you're going to need to do to be a licensed business is you're going to need to have all of your local regulatory approvals so that you can get in line to get your state license. And Santa Barbara is kind of behind the curve on that. At the same time, we're very close to some big metropolitan markets for this stuff, and we have some established indoor growing operations. I don't mean marijuana growing operations. I mean just other agricultural operations.
Right, you look down in CARP along the freeway. You have all of those.
all the old cut flower greenhouses and things like that. And that's what you need to grow cannabis is you need a secure indoor facility because there are going to be a lot of regulations around making sure that people don't get access to these things and the smells don't get out as much as possible. And so there's been a lot of activity around that. We're seeing that in our client base, and the county is moving forward right now, trying to figure out how they're going to come to terms with this. I think that the scale of this and the scope of this is caught everyone a little bit off guard, and people weren't particularly focused on it or worried about it in our county. And now they're realizing that there's a lot of very serious business people who would like to see some zoning and some regulations put into place so they can get their permits and get in line for their state licenses and get to work.
Well, sure, because it looks as if it's going to be far more lucrative than, say, a cut flower business.
Yeah, you know, MIT Forum had a presentation on this last week, and the numbers that people were throwing around were pretty big. And for example, they're saying that, you know, something like, gosh, I can't remember what the crop was they were comparing it to, but they were saying it was around $7 per square foot is what you could get.
For, say, strawberries or something.
Yeah, something like that. But you'd grow indoors in a greenhouse, and the marijuana was more like 60.
Wow, that's a significant.
Yeah,
but you have to be careful with anything new because our new attorney general is talking about trying to surpass state laws and prohibit marijuana sales. So there's also the possibility that for at least some time it could come crashing down.
Well, and that's a really important point, Neil, is that this is, you know, if you're getting into this business, you're getting into an illegal business. You know, there are state laws and there are federal laws, and marijuana is very much illegal under federal law. And the under the Obama administration, they had the Attorney General's office had made some commitments about not enforcing the law. And now that Jeff Sessions is the Attorney General, he's does not have a record of being friendly to the legalization of marijuana. And there's some question about where the feds are going to go with all of this. And so it's very much a cutting-edge, high-risk industry at the moment.
So some investors may own very expensive tulip greenhouses at some point in time.
Well, you think about the neighbors there. Gosh, if you're looking at the high density down, you know, in the city of Santa Barbara, can you imagine those people who own $5 million ranches over above the marijuana growing fields? You know, I've got to imagine there'll be some.
Well, you know, some
issues
that,
there.
Yeah, there are, and certainly there's. You know, you're not. Even if you find a greenhouse, you know, if the greenhouse is near a school or if it's too close to residential, I mean, there's going to be a whole host of other issues that come out as we get further along in this, and nobody knows where it's really going to go.
And so, it's the county then, because there aren't any growing facilities in the city proper of Santa Barbara. The county needs to come up with these regulations.
That's right. Well, that's where the focus is right now. That's where we're seeing it. And the county had it, you know, they had it on their agenda in February, and it'll be coming back around again. You know, there's no reason that you couldn't have grow operations in Santa Barbara, in the city of Santa Barbara, if the city of Santa Barbara chose to develop some zoning ordinances that provided for it. But I don't see that happening.
No. There's not enough open space.
You know, no.
There's not enough housing. That would just further impact the
right.
The
no, I mean, look, talking to issue. People from outside the county who are interested in these kind of issues, I mean, one of the first things I explained to them, other than reminding them that this remains illegal under federal law, is, look, just because you may have this impression about how liberal or how friendly people are in Santa Barbara to things like this doesn't mean that when it comes time to actually permit and approve and what's really an industrial function and you know, this commercial agricultural operations, that you're not going to run into a ton of resistance just like you do with any other development project in our community, because we're very protective of our space and our views and our resources.
Well, look at the Miramar project. Gosh, how long has that been going on? You know, it's like, that's not even by any residential, really.
That's, I'm not sure I was old enough to vote when that shut down.
So, yeah, gosh, so that's a lot of things to think about, which I think a lot of people get very fixated on how much money they're going to make out of the legalization of marijuana as opposed to what all the rules and regulations may be as it comes through, yeah, as it goes through the natural vetting process.
You're right. I think that there's a lot of excitement and a lot of cart before the horse. What I've seen, and you know, we met a couple of these guys at the MIT forum last week, but there are some businesses that are based in Santa Barbara that are getting into this industry in a big way, but they're not, you know, the executive offices are in Santa Barbara. The grow operations are not,
right?
Because the low-hanging fruit in terms of getting your commercial grow operation permitted right now is not going to be in the county of Santa Barbara. There might someday be opportunities to do that, but right now that's more of a long-term thing. And these guys that are hot to trot and have the projections where the arrow starts at the bottom left and goes right up to the top right corner of their chart, those guys are already locating their grow facilities somewhere else.
Well, and there are counties north of here that are friendly to that type of.
Yeah, that's right.
Growing operation. They're already in existence to some extent.
And there are other counties that have that were hit harder than we were in the Great Recession and that are more we are traditionally a very big ag county, but they have, you know, these are also ag counties out in the, you know, the Inland Empire or the High Desert and in the Central Valley where they're really excited to get businesses in and get the tax base growing again, and they've been a lot more accommodating to that sort of thing than we have, at least to date.
And they may have even more of a need when some of these new immigration policies eliminate people that can actually pick crops, and they may find it difficult to grow anything other than a high-yield product.
That said, though, they're going to have to change their signs. I just drove up to Stockton from here, and every 2 feet there's a sign that says, is growing food wasting water, you know, during the during the drought? They're going to have to take that sign down.
Yeah, although, you know, what's interesting with a high-revenue product like that, you wonder what kind of innovation it can drive in farming in general. Because you could start investing in things like 100% water recovery and things like that, which, you know, could trickle down to broccoli.
Well, the other side of that is the guy, I can just imagine somebody running one of these marijuana farms stoned and saying, man, I don't care how long it takes to grow. This is just really cool. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Property owners and landlords, are you looking for or considering a 1031 exchange? Would you enjoy the freedom of getting out of management, potentially generating monthly cash flow without paying capital gains taxes? What if you could invest in professionally managed properties anchored by historical stability of major universities? Hello, I'm Jim Whitson. If you're a property owner or landlord looking for or considering a 1031 exchange to diversify into multiple properties that I believe are well positioned and have limited correlations to the economy, please call me at 805-895-4176. That's 805-895-4176 for an appointment to see the great student housing 1031 exchanges that I have available for your consideration.
Suitable for accredited investors only. Past performance does not guarantee future results. Investments involve risk, and there's no assurance of attaining the investment objectives of any program. Securities offered through Oak Tree Securities Incorporated, only in states where Oak Tree Securities is registered.
Are you ready to start and run your own successful business? Ready to grow your small business or home business? Women's Economic Ventures is a local nonprofit helping women start and build successful businesses. In addition to their highly successful self-employment training program, Weave offers services to help women succeed at every stage of their business, from startup and launch to building and sustaining a business, including individual business counseling, professional networking events, advanced business training, and small business loans to start or expand a business. Over 1,000 local businesses are now owned and operated by women who have taken part in programs and services. Whether you're ready to start up, launch, build, or sustain your business, Women's Economic Ventures is right here to help you make it happen. Call 965-6073 or visit weaveonline.org.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence. So as a local law firm, how much, if any, of your business comes from referrals? I know that a lot of the real estate brokers in town get maybe 25% of their business from Los Angeles or New York. The big brokerage firms will recommend a client to them who is coming here for some purpose to maybe buy a summer house. And I suspect that there are businesses that are, whether it's marijuana or looking at retail, coming here to look at real estate. Does business come your way through these referrals?
Yes, absolutely. And another part of our business that I should mention is, you know, we do have a significant number of what I would call private clients or family office type of clients. And those often come our way through referrals, personal referrals, often from financial managers and financial advisors, sometimes from out of state, out of the area. You're just because of your background, you're making me think of one that came my way not too long ago from a New York-based financial management company with a family that was relocating to Santa Barbara from the East Coast after their kids were out and off to college. And that is it's definitely noticeable. It's something we pride ourselves on, trying to be able to get those referrals whenever we can. You know, the other place where we get a lot of out-of-the-area referrals is in litigation matters, because the large law firms, the economics of practicing or handling matters at a large law firm, you've got to have big dollar values involved to make that work. And so, you know, we like to think of ourselves as someone who's ready to bring it when it needs to be brought. Hopefully our reputation has extended out to some of the big firms that we've worked with, and they're able to refer us matters that are a little too small to work under their business model, but they want their clients to be satisfied and happy. Then the other thing, of course, is, you know, our little corner of the universe, you have to understand, especially in real estate, you know, you have to understand the local environment. With land use and development, the local political environment is very important. And so the local difference really matters, just like it does with brokers.
There's been there was a purchase, I guess. Brownstein bought a local, a national law firm.
Yeah.
Bought a local law firm. Is that a trend? I mean, will there be other national firms coming in here?
You know, I don't know. I mean, in Brownstein's case, and I don't know the details on this, but my impression is that the local firm that they acquired had a very good statewide practice in a real niche area, which was water law, which made them very attractive. There are some other national firms that have small outposts here in town, but it's not... you know, we probably don't have a big enough footprint to see a lot of that. In terms of big enough population base, you know, and I think most of those firms feel like, you know, they're going to try to service people out of a Century City office or a Los Angeles office, even way up here. And it's only in the odd case that they're going to feel the need to get located locally. So, no, I don't really see that happening. I think to become a takeover target for a big firm, I think you'd have to probably, I don't know if there's an overlap where a Santa Barbara firm could get large enough with primarily a local practice that they would become an acquisition target for a national firm.
Well, thank you so much for a very enlightening conversation.
And if somebody wanted to contact you, Marcus, what would be the best way for them to contact you or your firm?
Use my phone number, 805-966-7000.
Thank you again, and we'll be here next week at the same time. Thanks for listening.